Philip ran to the Ethiopian and heard him reading Isaiah the prophet and asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" And he said, "How can I, unless someone guides me?" Like the Ethiopian eunuch, there are millions of people around the world who want to understand what the Bible says, but they need someone to guide them. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation translates books like Luther's Small Catechism, which opens Scripture's meaning. To learn how you can help introduce people to the Savior, visit lhfmissions.org.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today we have another episode in our Leading Ladies series. This is so fun. We get to bring in another lady to the Ladies Lounge and basically just make them talk about themselves because we like to do that.
Yes.
It's more fun that way for us anyway. So, Erin, who is joining us today?
Today we have Juliana Schultz. She is a fellow Lutheran lady and a DCE serving as program manager of resources and leadership for LCMS Youth Ministry. She co-authored Relationships Count from CPH, and she co-hosts the KFUO podcast, End Goals. I don't really understand why it's only now that she's coming on as a guest. But
it's been a crossover.
We've all wanted. I know. We have all dreamed of this moment. Yes.
It's true.
Delayed this has been gratification. A
long time. No, it's fantastic. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you with us. So, first of all, tell us about yourself.
You get the really hard hitting interview questions from us.
Yeah, we
don't pull any punches. Tell us about yourself.
Right. Grew up in Topeka, Kansas, went to Concordia Seward and became a DCE, served in two different congregations, one in Plant City, Florida, which is in the Tampa Bay area, and then one in Chicago. And while I was in Chicago, got a master's degree in community development from Loyola University there in Chicago in their Institute of Pastoral Studies. And that combo package apparently was intriguing for things they were doing here at the International Center in St. Louis, because they wanted to start a program that would put young people into long-term service options in communities in urban areas particularly. And so I took the call here to the International Center in St. Louis in 2015 and have been serving in youth ministry since. But clearly my job changed about 3 years ago. Unfortunately, Lutheran Young Adult Corps is not around anymore. And now I do our resource development and our youth lead, which is our team leadership program.
Cool. I don't know why. I could swear that Loyola is a New Orleans university.
There are several of them.
I appreciate that gracious out for my confusion.
Yeah, no, there's several of them. Right. Okay. So that's why we clarify. I went to Loyola in Chicago.
Okay.
For my master's degree.
Got it.
And Concordia in Nebraska.
There could be a lot of confusion just with those college names. That would be like who knows where she went.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, it sounds like youth ministry is something you've been interested in at least since college. Were you always interested in youth ministry?
Yes and no. Okay. We'll start with this. We'll start with a no, which is probably a little heavier, in that I grew up as many other church worker kids with a mom who is also a DCE. My mom's a Lutheran teacher in DCE. And because my mom was the children and family DCE at my church, that was going to be a hard pass for me.
Yeah.
That was not a thing that I wanted to do. She also went to Nebraska again. Hard pass, was not going to do that. And then I spring break of my senior year of high school, went on a mission trip through Ysleta Lutheran Mission in El Paso.
Yep.
Served for a week as we were driving back to Topeka. My DCE, who served in youth ministry, Jim Bradshaw, sat with me and said, like, okay, Juliana, real talk. Like, why are you not becoming a DCE? and that, you know, the Holy Spirit used that conversation to really prompt, and I got to have the fun conversation with my parents coming back in April of your senior year of high school. Okay, just kidding. Now I want to do something totally different than the plan. But once I got to that point, then then serving broadly in Christian education in the church had always really been like that became pretty clearly what I wanted to be doing.
Nice.
I'm sure there are no other church worker children who have ever experienced that particular.
On our Set Apart to Serve series on KFUO, plug for KFUO coffee hour. Yeah, that story comes up quite a bit of kids who are like, yeah, I just grew up in a church work family, and so I never wanted to do it. And yet the Holy Spirit works in mysterious ways.
Does what he will.
That is true. Is there anything else you want us to know about, like, your family or your upbringing, your church?
Yeah. So I am the oldest of three in my family. My parents now have left Topeka. They live in West Des Moines, Iowa, and they're retired. And my sister and her husband and their three kids, who I absolutely adore and could spend the entire podcast now talking about.
Oh, I'm sure.
The Nifflings. I live in Southern California, which is a dreadful distance away. Mm. And my youngest brother passed away in 2018. So, in my household here in St. Louis, it's just me and a houseplant. So I am single, but I am really blessed to have a lot of like extended friend family that keeps me really active, both here in St. Louis and then across the country. So really blessed to have, you know, just a ton of great people in my life around that. So about my church, so I am a member.
Are you the youth leader at your church?
I am, which is such a cool experience. So I am a member at Christ Memorial Lutheran Church, where the DCE is actually a classmate of mine from Seward. Super fun. He is the professional and I'm the volunteer. I attend at Reliant, which is our city campus. And so it's a much smaller campus. It's a much smaller group of people. And so then I volunteer and teach middle school confirmation and their Bible study time. So that I love doing. I missed doing when I didn't get to do it. So that brings me just so much joy to be able to continue to be a part of that. And then through church, got connected to, there's some churches in St. Louis that are raising up young adult interns. And so I get to work on that leadership team and help with training with that. So I have a great deal where I get to do fun stuff here in this office and great ministry here, and then volunteer and do other cool stuff in my church and in that life. So I'm really grateful to have pastors and Daniel Meyer, who's our DCE, who are willing to let me kind of step into both places to do that.
Okay, you just teased us a little bit there. You talked about the fun stuff that you get to do in your day job. What is the coolest thing that you've gotten to do? Or you can have a list, like top five. What are the coolest things you have gotten to do working in LCMS Youth Ministry?
Yeah, probably the coolest / scariest in that category would be that for the last couple of youth gatherings, I have had to stand in front of the audience at the LCMS Youth Gathering when there's 20,000 people and talk for 90 seconds about one of the ministries that I'm a part of, a youth lead, and then before that was Lutheran Young Adult Corps. And that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a really unique experience to be able to do that. Probably something that I would have never ever done in any other context. Mm-hmm. That's been great. Mm-hmm. Probably some of the most rewarding work I've done was, you mentioned Relationships Count, which is the outcome of our big millennials in the LCMS study and that research project. And being able to work with our team of, there are five of us that were on the team, to do some really interesting, what we think is really valuable research for the church to be able to talk about what it is that we're doing well to keep our young people in the church and tied to that. And then what are we doing that maybe we could be doing better to help people stay disciples of Jesus Christ for life? And what does that look like? And then being able to write about it, which then opened the door for us to work on 7 Practices of Healthy Youth Ministry, which is the latest book that we came out with, that I wrote with Mark Kiesling. I'm a writer. I love writing. And so like to be able to have a book that I can like say, like I helped write that is pretty fantastic. And again, probably something I would have never gotten to do outside of this role, which is pretty phenomenal.
And you have a lot of content on the Engold podcast about both of those. Like, yes. We won't talk at length about those here because that is already in audio content elsewhere. Yeah. And we'll link to those. But I think you covered a lot of stuff about relationships count. And have you gotten through all 7 practices on Engold?
We are just restarting a series where we're going back through them. We went through them when we started the podcast, actually probably just after you guys started your podcast. We started around the same
time. Yeah, we did start around the same time.
And so it's like episodes like 7 through 10. Okay. And so like we're finally like we should maybe talk about that again. It's been a minute.
Yeah. It has been. Yeah.
So for those who are new to the podcast, End Goals?
Yeah, what's the concept?
It's a catchy title, but I don't really get the concept. And who is it for? What's the content? And how are you involved?
So we decided that we thought podcasts would be a great way for particularly lay leaders. So we know that 85% or more of our adult leaders, say at the gathering, are lay leaders, right? Most of the people, the vast majority of people who are serving their young people in the church are not professionals. They're not pastors or DCEs. They're people who just love young people. And they don't have a lot of time and they don't have a lot of training. And so we wanted to do a podcast we try and keep it around 30 minutes, something that's short, that they can listen to and feel like they are more equipped to be able to serve the young people in their church. And so we like to say we bring on people much smarter than Mark, my co-host, Mark Kiesling, and I bring on people much smarter than us to talk about the things that are happening in youth ministry and to be able to share that with the people who maybe wouldn't have access to those people or that information otherwise.
End Goals. What's the name?
Right. So if you look at our 7 practices of healthy youth ministry, one of the things we have is what we call the 40 end goals, which is like 40 things we want young people to know before they leave their youth ministry and graduate from high school. Okay. And so on the podcast, if you listen to one of the first things we say is we want this to help you towards your end goal, which is young people who are disciples of Jesus Christ for life. All right. So what's the end goal? What is the thing you want your youth ministry to be doing? Right. Youth ministry can sometimes feel like we're just doing it to do it because we're supposed to do it because that's a thing that we had when we were in high school.
Yeah.
And really, we really want people to ask the question, like, why is that young person different? Because they were in youth ministry, because they experienced youth ministry. And what do you want that end goal to be? And so leaning towards that end goal, I think we thought it was cooler. It's a little confusing. I get that. It was, but once you name it, you can't not name it again.
Yeah.
So it's maybe one of those names that is a little confusing, but we live with it because.
Yeah.
Us it made sense at the time.
Question.
Yeah. At one point, the podcast was going to be us like going through those end goals, and then that was very quickly like cut from that.
Yeah. So you serve in a variety of different ways then, between being in this building, doing admin, big picture, kind of synod-wide stuff, which is super cool to be able to do. But you also serve in a church. You also get to do other stuff. What are some of the things that you've learned about youth ministry leadership and what leaders actually need in youth ministry, because you have such a variety of different things that you've been able to experience?
Everybody needs, I think, something a little different, which is why we try and everybody's context is a little different.
Right.
Right. And youth ministry is an ever-changing river, right? both because culture is changing, generations are changing, but also because every year you get a new group of freshmen. And you say goodbye to another group of high school or of seniors, right? Your group is never the same, and not everybody's context. So we have youth groups that are out in the country versus some that are in the inner city versus whatever. I think all of those youth groups probably have most in common, that they want young people to grow in the faith, to be deeply understand their baptismal faith and to be resilient in that faith as they go to live out their vocations. I mean, that's what they want, and they need the ability to know how to do that well. So we talk a lot about relationships. We saw that in our research. That was one of the things that came out loud and clear. It's why we called the book Relationships Count, was that you can do a lot of programs, but unless that's really building your relationships and bringing your young people closer to God and His Word, it's a lot of flash, right? Yeah. So how is the programs that you're doing serving to get young people closer to God and His Word and His people? And what does that look like? So we have a lot of ways that we do that. We have a whole resource website, the books we write, the podcast. We try and come up with a lot of different ways that are going to all be beneficial. And National Youth Gathering is one of those big places that we're able to do that. But I love youth leaders. They love young people. And that's we're a weird bunch that are like, bring on the middle schoolers. we're people who are like, absolutely, I will go bring my own sheets and I will go sleep on a very uncomfortable bed and I will take you on a retreat and spend my entire weekend doing that gladly. Not everybody loves that. But those of us that do and love those young people and want to be a part of that, we want to support them in every way that we can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have started doing some youth stuff at my church.
Hey,
it's very exciting. Yes.
Be a weird youth leader. I
know.
Like us.
I know. It's not as hard as some might think to be weird.
It's really not hard to be weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably safer when you're working with young people to just own the weird thing early on and not pretend that you're not weird. Because they will smell you out in like 3 seconds flat.
Right.
Yeah. So just go with it. But yeah, I can see you as a youth group. I'd send my kids to a youth group where you were the leader.
Same.
Yeah. So what's your best approach to picking out, say, like a Bible study? Like, do you just go to a store and you're like looking, you're like, this one looks sort of interesting, flipping through it. Like, I've tried different approaches, okay? And I'm not sure the best approach. What advice do you have? You're like, here's a good approach.
We just did an episode on this.
Yeah.
Just dropped an episode. So you can go listen to that, but I'll give you kind of the too short to listen kind of summary for you.
TLDR.
Right? Which is, you're going to ask some key questions, right? You're going to ask, like, who are the kids in my youth group, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who am I talking to? Are these kids that have extensive time in God's Word? They've been in church. They've done the story is like, or are these kids who are like, I don't know where Exodus is in the Bible, right? Like, where are my kids in terms of understanding biblical kind of knowledge, that kind of thing, or even theological knowledge? Like, where are they at? I think it's really important to talk to your kids and ask them what they're interested in. Like, what are the questions that they have? What are the topics they want to get into? They are, I think, will probably surprise you with their ability to answer that question pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll get into it and they'll be like, just kidding, that's not what I wanted. And that's okay, right? But but there's some listening to them that you want to do. And then you're going to be looking for things that are, I think, this is the hardest part, which is like theologically accurate, right? And sometimes you can find things, like if you Google like Bible study on whatever, like you might come up with something, right? Or you might feel confident enough to be able to rewrite something into our Lutheran doctrine if you want to spend the time on that. Okay. Or you go to places like CPH, right? Or places like Youth eSource, which is our resource website that's all been doctrinally reviewed. And so you can use it with a level of comfort, right? So it depends on what you want to spend your time on, right? But I think making sure that we don't shortchange the prep time that goes into that, because that's one of the hardest things, right? Like, we think like, oh, we're just going to do a devotion and I'll just wing that. And like, the teenagers can tell if you spend, you know, no time prepping this. But they can also tell when you've really invested in making sure that they have a great educational experience in that, and that you are passionate about them wanting to know more about God and his word. Mm. So I think that's hard. But also, like, sometimes you just leave it open for questions. I've had some of the most interesting Bible studies happen when I planned to go one direction and the youth were like, okay, but tell me about the Apocrypha. And you're like, I'm what? But where? And why? Sure? Okay. Right? So sometimes you have to be willing to kind of go where they're going to, you're going to prep it and they're going to go, but no, something different. And sometimes there's really valuable things that'll come out of that too. Okay. It takes a little time, right?
Yeah.
There's time that you have to devote to it. And there's some practice that goes into it. You know, first year teachers don't always teach the best their first few classes, right?
That's true.
You gotta give yourself a little time to figure out what's the swing
of your groove.
Answering questions and activities and who's going to talk too much and who do you need to bring up to ask more questions and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You got me on a topic. We could be here for a while. So
yeah, actually, while we're on this topic, I know this interview was supposed to be about you and your leadership ability and all of that, but I'm going to lean on that leadership ability because I'm in a somewhat similar position to Aaron. And we just moved and we are attending a new church. And it turns out we are, together with the new pastor to the church, we are the third family with teenagers.
Oh,
yes.
Which is a big milestone because with three families of teenagers, you can have a youth group.
You can.
Two families, not as easy. Three families, right. You can do it. So, you know, we all obviously got to start small.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, having grown up in the generation of the youth group pizza party as sort of the old go-to, my kids just don't get that excited about pizza. If we were to start youth groupy type things, aside from they're going to have a really wonderful Bible study on Sunday morning, I can tell you this. What's the best bang for your buck in like trying to get kids fired up about
the next
youth
piece
group?
You add?
Yeah. What do you add after a really awesome Bible study with a LCMS chaplain on apologetics topics? Like, I seriously want to go to this class.
Amazing. You would all like to join that Bible study. Right? No, I think that's really fascinating. So when we talk about, I'm going to take us back for just a second, right?
Yeah.
So we talk about the seven practices of healthy youth ministry. One of the things we said as we designed those practices was that any church can have healthy youth ministry. Doesn't matter what your resources level are. Doesn't matter if you have one kid or if you have 100 kids. Mm-hmm. Right? Healthy youth ministry is not about how many times you go bowling, right? Or how many kids show up to that Bible study, or whether or not you have a conglomerate enough to go play paintball, right? Like, youth ministry is what happens when works through us to care for the young people in our church and our community, right? So I too grew up in the youth program sort of youth group sort of mentality. And I think there's real value in that. Like, I certainly benefited from that. I grew up with a really large youth group that did a lot of really active things. But I don't want people who have, they're working on three families. And if one of them's on vacation, you got nobody, right? Kind of a thing, right? To say like, well, we just can't do youth ministry because that's just not the case, right? Now, if you're talking about like what's going to be the best bang for your buck, it's going to be the things that put them into situations where they can build relationships with each other and places where they can build relationships with other adults. So often I say like maybe one of the first things you want to try and do is some service work, right? Mm-hmm. I think that engages your young people in using their gifts and skills. They get to have a little bit of ownership in that. It's often easy for you to integrate older adults into that. And that's a safe place for them to like start to build relationships with other or even young adults because we have a shared goal and outcome that we're trying to get to. And that sometimes, you know, kind of lessens the anxiety about like, I don't want to do like a weird get to know you game where I have to discuss
forced conversation,
right?
Or
like,
not always helpful.
Or like, I'm just such a stranger kind of situation that right? But having some sort of like common goal that we're headed towards can really help kind of, you know, grease the wheels of that relationship building. And that can be really huge. But the other piece of that is just asking your young people, again, just asking them like, what are they interested in doing? Mm-hmm. And it's going to change from cycle to cycle. Like, your kids are going to get older. So as they do things, that might change. So it's something you have to kind of come back to. And we talk about giving them meaningful contribution, like letting them make some of those decisions. I had a whole long span where I had a group of kids that were like, they did not want to play basketball active gym games. And so we met in a local Panera, and then our group shifted, and then it was like, nope, now we're going to be back to, we wanted to spend a lot more time doing open gym, and then we were going to balance that with Bible. So like, yeah, I think whatever is going to facilitate the rest of that, I think, is kind of your next step. You don't have to buy off too much, right? They don't have to be meeting every Wednesday or, right? Like, you don't have to be over programming it.
Right.
But that's usually where I would suggest to start. So,
okay. Listen to the kids and service projects, not icebreakers. Fun story. Just like a week ago, we were at a new group and they led an icebreaker for fourth through sixth graders. Ooh. And by the end of it, my daughter was in tears because she did not know anybody, and this was not breaking the ice for her.
Oh, no!
And I was like, hard. Yeah, so as you're saying this, I'm like, this is good wisdom right here. I don't know how you came by this wisdom, I presume, experience and research.
Yeah, I tortured some kids.
There were
first,
a few tears.
Right? No, but I think that it takes some practice, right? Like, you know, I think people laugh a little bit, but like, I think we underestimate, like, directors of Christian education we do have high level training in these things, right?
Yeah.
So when people are like, oh, well, in youth group, we just played a game. I was like, yeah, but I don't think you think about how much time and energy I put into what game we were going to play and what the rules were going to be and what were the parameters of that was going to be. And is it cooperative or is it competitive? Is it one-on-one or is it in a group? And who am I trying to pull out and who do I need to hamper so that they're not winning too fast? And right, like just a game, if somebody's really thinking through that, again, another episode on end goals.
Right? You're like, so we do that,
right? We're instigating the Ashley rule. Ashley can't win. That's the rule.
But you know, when you're really thinking through those things programmatically for what works for your youth group, hopefully the end result is you don't have anybody who's at the end crying, because I've been really thoughtful about like, yeah, we have some new kids and they're going to feel a little awkward. So I'm picking games specifically that are low personal disclosure, low touch, right?
Yeah.
We're building trust before we step into like trust falls, right?
Yeah.
That's hard though.
As an introvert kid who also grew up during pizza party youth group days of like, a lot of stuff was built for the extrovert kids of like, we're just going to go be wild and crazy for a while. So I love this conversation about like being intentional about including people and including the kids who also may need things that don't require you to just small talk with other people for an hour, because that's terrifying. You mentioned something about empowering kids or giving them ownership. Mm. What's important to you as a leader then about empowering the youth that you're leading to lead themselves? Why is that a thing that's important for them when they're in middle school, high school?
Yeah. So I'm going to, a little personal disclosure here, right? So I am a big nerd. No one is who's been me is like surprised by that. And I am high introvert, right? So like youth group was sometimes a bit of a struggle. School was sometimes a bit of a struggle for me. And like I said, I have a DCE in my church, Jim Bradshaw, who when I was in sixth grade, was 11 years old, was like, hey, would you be interested in being the student representative for the sixth grade to the youth board? And I was like, yes, sir. I took this role so seriously, right? I had a binder and a pencil, and I showed up every month to their agendaed board meetings led primarily by adults. And I sat there, I took notes, I listened to how we managed the budget, right? Like they did not change this agenda because there was especially a child in the room. But I really took a lot of pride in that. And I was really lucky to be surrounded by not just Jim, but other lay leaders who took me seriously, who listened to my input, who answered my questions, who made sure that I understood what was happening and could contribute in whatever way I could. Like, no one should have taken me serious at that point. Like, there is no reason for them to have, but they did, right? They put me in that position. And I stayed, I did that every year except for one, all the way through my senior year of high school.
Oh, wow.
And so I got to see the good, the bad, the ugly, the hard conversations, the decisions that we had to make. Why do we do this and not that? And I got to contribute to that. And that made a huge difference. And I think when Jim makes his final conversation of like, be a DCE is really kind of tipping over something he'd set up. A lot of dominoes he'd set up for a lot of years.
He's like, this did not come out of left field.
Right? Right? Now, to me, it felt like very different, right? But had set up all these opportunities for me. And even if I hadn't, I would still have been able to go on and been a lay leader who was really well equipped to be able to do that, right?
Yeah.
So you do that not just for your church work future kids, but for all your kids, right?
Yeah.
Giving them that input. And I get to do that today. Now we have a program called Youth Lead where we work with an elected executive team of young people. And the whole idea of Youth Lead is this leadership weekend where it's led by young people. And in order for that to work, I get to mentor the young people the weekends, right? But for us, like, that makes all the difference when they can see that young people are valued, that their input is valued, that they are actively using their gifts and skills as a part of the church, that they are important, that God has given them gifts that other people in the church value, really makes a huge difference for them in the way that they think about who they are and who God has made them to be. There is an incredible amount of value to empowering your young people in those ways. And we know, we can go back to statistics that say, like, when we have opportunities for young people to serve in leadership and to make meaningful contributions to what's happening in their church, that they're more likely to stay in their home church, they're more likely to stay in the LCMS, they're more likely to attract young people to your congregation. There's a lot of really incredible benefits. We can talk about why that is, and that's probably a whole other thing, but like, it's one of my passions, and I'm really grateful that I get to be a part of helping make sure that young people get those opportunities in congregations across the country.
This is triggering a memory for me that reinforces everything that you're saying. So I also was a nerd. Big surprise.
Was?
Am
nerd, but started early. And the church I was the LCMS church I was confirmed in, they had a practice of giving offering envelopes to newly confirmed teenagers to encourage giving. And at the time, I had very little money, as teenagers do. But I got these envelopes, and I said to myself, no taxation without representation. I heard this somewhere. So I started showing up at voters' meetings.
Yes,
absolutely.
This is so on brand. I love it.
And I was a little disgruntled that I couldn't vote. I didn't understand that. I get it now, you know, legal entities and whatnot, you know, that the decisions that a congregation makes go on the legal record and you can't have minors making those decisions. I understand that. But didn't stop me from raising my hand and talking. And you know what? That nobody ever looked down at me for that. Nobody ever said, what are you doing here? Or shouldn't you be outside with the teenagers? Or, you know, never effectively turned off the mic. And that experience probably has more to do with me sitting here today than all the pizza parties put on by that same church. And they were good pizza parties. But just the feeling like, okay, I'm allowed to be in the room with the big people, and I'm allowed to even raise my hand and have a voice, that spoke volumes to me about my place in the church. So thank you. I'd forgotten completely about that snarky young person.
I love that. Awesome. I would do that in my congregation. Like, we had a vote. We were going to extend a call to a pastor, and I made sure we had young people. I was like, you need to be in the room. You can't vote, but you can be in the room and you can ask questions and you can tell, this is going to be your pastor too, right? You have a vested interest in that. And I think when adults treat young people, especially in the church, and say like, yeah, absolutely, this is a space for you, and we want to listen to you because you have important things to say, that makes a huge, huge difference for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. inspiring this lost memory for this walk down memory lane. But I want to ask, I want to hear more about you. Obviously, you are in a position of leadership, although it's kind of a behind the scenes leadership role. Like, you may be out in front of the youth gathering for, you know, 90 seconds, but you're not going to be headlining it. But not you yet. Are in position, no, not yet. You're in a position of huge leadership and influence. How did God prepare you for the role that you have now?
Slowly. And over. And again, much like that preparation of serving in my youth group and not really knowing what that was for until it's like, oh, this was all preparation for me to be a director of Christian education. Mm. If you had told me when I started my career that, oh, I was going to end up working at LCMS Youth Ministry and doing what I'm doing, I would have just laughed. Like, that's silly. That's not a thing. That, there are times still where, like, my email, I'm like, this is some sort of long-term practical joke. Like, someone has made a mistake, right? So for me, it was that experience that I had in high school really so tied to the church and how important that was to me. Despite the fact that, you know, I went to a public high school, I did not have a lot of Christian friends, but that was just a really, like, that identity as a Christian was just so central to who I was. And my parents had done such an amazing job of raising me up. And, like, my mom's a DCE, but my dad's also highly active in the church, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, grew up in a household where, like, that was just who we were. Like, that was who God had called us to be. And so felt like that really led well into church work. And I loved serving in the congregation. There are days that I still miss it, but also have other gifts and skills that weren't necessarily being used in the congregation. Mm. And so when the call here came, both, you know, the training that I had in my master's degree, but also the things I wanted to do in terms of writing or my love of kind of program development and administration kind of stuff, I got to kind of lean into that. And with that, kind of, I never was one who wanted to be up front. Like, that has never been where I 0% want to do that. And yet this job sometimes asks, like, okay, great, get to go be in mm-hmm. front of a bunch, not just mm-hmm. usually not in front of 20,000 people, but we have things that I have to stand in front of and talk about. And that over time, God has really guided me and given me great mentors and insight into what it is that my voice is. What has he gifted me to sound like in this space? And I tried really hard for a long time to be like that super storyteller, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like that amazing storyteller person who's just super captivating. And like,
they have a story for every... No matter what you're doing, they're suddenly telling a story.
Some people are like that. Yeah.
And that is not my jam. My jam, like, I tried for a long time, but I can do it, but I'm not. But if you give me a chart, right? And this is like, right? Like, this research project fell in our laps. We did this research project, and here's what I discovered, that I can go, look, here's this chart that gives us this data. And this is what it's telling you. And this is why it matters. And this is what it means in implication wise and what's happening in your congregation. And so
you can make people, like, actually understand it.
Right.
That's a huge skill.
Right. But like, not one that I ever thought that I had or had ever really developed. And so then having an opportunity to do that in this job, to be able to look at the data we found or other people's data and say, like, okay, this is what this crazy line means for you when you're starting to work on your youth ministry. This is the implication of that for you. And to be able to help you and other people in the church use data, not to make decisions about what we say about the gospel, because that's not what we're doing.
Right.
But to make good and wise decisions about how we share the gospel with other people, and especially with young people. That is something that God has gifted me that I would have never found outside of this role. Hmm. So this is a really kind of a long, convoluted way to say, like, I sort of fell into a bunch of this and both learned a lot and then also discovered that, like, hey, I'm actually pretty good at that. And I might do some more of it.
Uh-huh. Sounds familiar.
So were you involved in the research project from the beginning, or did you sort of come into it in the middle? You got to be in there from the ground up?
Yeah. So with the millennials and the LCMS study, there was an initial meeting because there had been a proposal by somebody else outside of us to do some research.
Okay.
And I got sent to this meeting because I'm the person in our building who cares for young adults in particular, right? Yep. So that's part of my job is working with young adults. And this survey was supposed to be about young adults. That millennials were young adults at the time. They are not. Yeah. They're old people now. But
yes, we are.
With mortgages and children. But
with children and youth group, actually.
Yes,
they're not young anymore.
But at that point, they were, at some point, were in their 20s. This is 10 years ago, right?
Yep. Okay.
The end of millennials were still in their 20s. And I said, well, okay, let's there's a group of us who are talking about what it is that this research wanted to do. And I said, no. And the room was like, what? And I was like, I don't think they're asking anything interesting.
Huh?
And this started a conversation about like what I would want to ask and what other people in the room would want to ask about millennials and what we felt like we didn't know.
Okay.
Right? What did we feel like the LCMS didn't know about our relationship to people who had left the church, right? Or who had stayed? What are the questions we felt like we really needed to be asking? So I was from the start. And then we were really blessed that we had Dr. Dave Reeder and Dr. Kevin Borchers, who were both on sabbatical for a semester, who were interested in some of the same conversations, joined our team pretty early on, and they were invaluable. And then had obviously Reverend Dr. Mark Kiesling, who's my boss, I've referenced him a couple of times, as well as Ryan Kernut, who's the rosters and statistics person.
Oh, Ryan is amazing.
Yeah. Who's amazing. And that was an amazing team. And we thought, oh, this will be this little research study. And truly, God did the thing that like none of us can ever explain.
Yep.
And that 2,000 millennials responded to the study.
Wow. That's amazing.
And we went, I mean, I can remember Ryan sending us updates while we were on the
ground.
Right? Right. It's actually like way beyond what we would consider statistics, right? Like,
yeah.
Because sometimes we could do surveys that are a lot smaller and still consider them statistically valid. But Ryan's sending us updates and he's like, 500 people have already taken the survey in like the first 24 hours. We were like, fluke. It's a fluke. And then the next day, like, it's another 500. We're like, what is happening?
Wait, I'm a millennial and you actually want me to talk about myself? Yes, please.
We had purposely done one open-ended question for everybody and then two additional open-ended questions for people who had left the church, who had grown up in the Lutheran church and left.
Oh, you didn't get those.
I did not get those.
Right? And of that, still we had 40,000 words.
Wow.
Right? Of people telling us their stories of their relationship to the church and what went well and what went wrong. And that, for me, I mean, that talk about moments that change your trajectory, your passion, your heart for the church. Mm. If you're somebody who took this survey, I read every single word, probably more than once. And really, like, we prayed over it and we cried over it and we celebrated over it and all the data as well. There were a lot of amazing things that we were able to do with that.
Is there, like, obviously the millennial study is a few years old at this point. Will there be like a Gen Z study, a Gen Alpha study? Yeah. Like, obviously young people change. Some things don't change.
Yeah.
But they're just different. Are you all on top of that?
Well, so couple things. Like, one is we have been doing a longitudinal study at every gathering.
Oh.
Right? So we do something called the youth poll. We've done it every 3 years at the gathering since the 80s, since the original gatherings.
Yes.
Right? So we do that. So we keep up with that every year, and we can look back at past results and be able to compare and contrast. And so we learn every time from that. So we do that really regularly. Would have been in the 16 gathering, we added a YAV poll for our young adult volunteers. We also have an adult poll that goes with that. So we do that. We continue to do that. In terms of like a big research project, like the Millennials and the LCMS project, that was time consuming to the point where we would love to be able to do a second round of that. But partly we again, we're asking the question, like, what's the most important question for us to ask, right? And so right now we are working on proposals for, like, what was it look like for us to get more deeply into congregations with young people and suss out, like, what are the practices that we're seeing that are effective? But I do think that there is something we're going to need to come back to at some point is to come back and look at Gen Z and Gen Alpha, who's now getting ready to start middle school.
Oh, my. Which
is, well, they're in middle school. The first batch of them are in middle school. So I think there's going to need to be some of that. We'd love to be able to do it. It's all about timing and resources and that kind of thing. But
Understood. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No.
A parent of Gen Z and Gen Alpha, I'm invested in this question.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the more interesting things we found, like, one of the goals of the study was to say, like, if we do this research exclusively with LCMS, is it going to say the same things as we see from, like, Barna or Gallup or Fuller? Or are we going to see something distinct? And there are a few places in which we can strongly say, like, yeah, Lutherans are distinct. The way that we bring our young people up in worship, specifically with us, and that worship is intergenerational, is different than what we would see from evangelical kind of circles.
Yeah.
Their confirmation has a difference that makes a difference for us that doesn't work for other people, or sorry, it doesn't work, but, like, is not something that happens in other denominations. But broadly speaking, our LCMS data says the same thing as everybody else's.
Okay, that is really useful to know.
You can say, like, oh, yeah, well, there are some spaces where, like, if you're asking, like, well, that might be different for us because we have a connection with middle schoolers that other churches won't, something like that. But broadly speaking, yeah, we're right in line with what everybody else is finding with their both good and bad.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Really helpful.
Yeah.
Because I've often looked at, you know, Barna or Pew or any of these other research studies and said, but yes, but does that work for LCMS? And sounds like you guys proved it.
Yeah. I mean, we got pretty close to the same numbers. Now, we got some nuance that they won't have, right? So that's why we continue to do the research, is that there's definitely some space and some nuance that we get that they won't have looking very specifically at our denomination. But yeah, you can look at that other data and say, like, yeah, it's probably pretty close, if not right on to what we're seeing. So
when you think about some of these next generations, what do you feel like, what are some of the unique gifts that they offer the church that the older generations, I don't know, that we need? Like, what do they offer that we need that's different?
Yeah, I love that Gen Z is highly empathetic. And I think that comes from them being very aware of what happens in the world around them. I remember growing up in this, you know, in my, Topeka's not a tiny town, but, like, I had a very small bubble in which I lived. And I sort of understood stuff happening outside of my bubble, but not really. Whereas they every day are inundated with information about what's going on with other people. And I think with that comes some downsides, right? Some information overload, who are the voices they're listening to. But broadly speaking, I do think it makes them strongly empathetic to other people. They're much easier for them to put their feet in other people's shoes. And I think that helps them tremendously in sharing the gospel with other people and being able to love people well in Jesus's name and that kind of a thing. I think they are a scrappy, like, problem-solving kind of bunch, these high schoolers right now. Like, you can throw a lot at them, and they can really, like, make lemonade out of lemons. There's, like, right? I think sometimes older adults, especially in the congregation, like, we have this problem, and we're just going to, like, they just try and process it to death. And I think if we just threw in front of a bunch of high schoolers, they would be like, this is what we do. And then you just figure it out, right?
Yeah.
These are people who, they want to run their own businesses. They figured out how to celebrate key moments while we were in COVID. Lots of them are people who, like, do side gigs. Like, they're just used to being a very problem-solving bunch. Now, with that, I think we do need to be concerned about their mental health. And even if they're a good problem solver, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have a resilient, strong. There's a, if you get under that surface, there's a lot to be concerned about there. but I think the church can give them a lot more responsibility, let them run with some stuff. And I think if we're ready to do that, we put them in a voters meeting. They're going to solve all the problems, right? Yes. Like they're just going to, they're going to tell you what's what, right?
And then when you find them in the ladies' lounge afterwards, sobbing and saying, "What is wrong with me?" Just be ready for the big hugs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's both, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're incredibly achievement oriented, right? They want to get things done. They're a doer generation. But I also think that they have tied a lot of their identity to what they can get done.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it's about like, how do I make sure that you know who you are in Christ, regardless of whether or not you made the team or you got the A or whatever. But they're funny. I will say, like, they are pretty darkly funny. Like, their humor is pretty, you know, I worry about their levels of hope sometimes. But they're open to talking about anything. Like, they're a very open group and they're very, very funny. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of values. And I think that balances out some other things that we see in the church, right? So, you know, God put us in church together with all ages for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are things that an energy they bring, passion they bring, a readiness to change the world that we, I think, you lose when you get older that can really be valuable to older adults. Hmm.
Okay, Aaron only asked you like 3/4 of the question that was on the sheet, and I feel like somebody's going to have to ask this last little bit. So I'll do it because I actually already know the answer, but What does skibbity toilet mean?
Speaking of humor.
So, well, okay, Rachel, I'm curious. You say you know the answer.
No, I don't know the answer. I know what MatPat says the answer is.
Right?
I don't know what's happening right now.
So here's what I understand. So first of all, like skibbity is sort of a meaningless word, right?
It's
so like
just
it means what it means in context, right? Mm-hmm. So like it is a fun word to say that you can use in a lot of different ways to mean a lot of different things. So it's like a contextual word, right?
Okay.
Like, you know how
it's an amplifier,
right? Like something can be bad, but that could be bad or it could be good. It depends on the context you use it in.
Yeah.
Right. So skibbity would be like, so skibbity toilet would probably indicate that this is not a great thing. Right.
Right.
That context together now, but like, it's hard to tell, right? Because like, I don't know in what world you use that. So I'm assuming skibbity toilet's a bad thing. But like, it's different than other words like riz, where I can come back to the source word and understand exactly what that is, because that has kind of a constant meaning, right? Sigma, again, do you want the meaning to sigma? Or are you looking for like sigma's very, like, it means the same thing every time. Skibbity is, I think, one of those. Like,
yeah. Well, and skibbity toilet, of course, is a TV show. Series, a web series.
The heads are taking over the
world.
Yeah. It's weird.
So it's really weird. And I don't think there is, maybe there's a meaning. Anyway. Hey, you know what? The fact that you could even get that far, I think really speaks to your credibility as a youth ministry leader. And you passed the test. Well done.
I make teenagers on the regular explain to me which emojis mean what and why I should use which ones. Right? Because I have to text with them all the time. And I was like, I need to be clear in my communication. And that means I need to know which happy face means happy face.
Yeah.
And not which happy face accidentally means sad face, because I don't understand that. So I am lucky to have a group of teenagers who regularly inform me that my smiley face should have no teeth because that's aggressive. I don't understand.
It is aggressive.
I have no idea. I don't think
I never use that. Well, I don't never use that one.
And you also need teenagers to tell you which smiley face is the equivalent of like a wolf whistle kind of situation, because that's pretty awkward.
It is.
Emoji is its own language.
Totally,
it's a thing.
Is.
Yep.
Which of you two, Aaron or Sarah, put the skibbity toilet question on the question list?
I did.
That was
Aaron. I keep hearing all this stuff and I'm like, usually I'm really good at picking up meaning from context. I got nothing with like,
maybe that's the whole point
there. So that's why I was like, is it just like a flavor amplifier? Is it MSG? Is that what skibbity is? It's MSG. You just add, it's umami. It's adding that
all of the Gen Zers that listen to us are going to at us after this.
Okay,
right, you are talking, guys.
You can at them about. If I got it wrong, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
According to the etymology nerd quoted on today.com, which is the most boomer source I can find, the most interesting thing about the word skibbity is that unlike a regular word, it doesn't have a set definition, but can just be used as an adjective anywhere.
Mm-hmm. There you go. The internet has spoken.
I mean, you spend enough time flavor. With teenagers. I know what they mean when they say, uh-huh. to be fair. I am too old to use the word.
Yeah.
Right? So, but that's part of the youth ministry thing. Uh-huh. So, I just am who I am, and I'm going to text with all punctuation, and I'm going to tell you that I don't mean to be aggressive about it. I understand you read that as yelling, but I need to put a period in that sentence. I just do. All right.
I have stopped using periods because now I see it, how it's aggressive.
No, don't go over to the dark side.
I'm sorry. No.
I don't. Grammar is important.
Wow. My mom would be very angry with me right now. I'm sorry, Mom.
But I love that, Juliana, that you are not only accepting that this is their culture, that they find periods uh-huh. aggressive. I thought just all caps was aggressive, but okay, whatever.
That's yelling.
But the fact that you are communicating back to them, I understand and respect your culture, but in my culture, we use periods, so I will use periods, but maybe you can understand that I'm not yelling at you. Like, that's a great back and forth intergenerational conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I think for the most part, young people want you to be you. They don't want you to, no one wants me to try and be a 16-year-old or a cool kid. I will say, being on this podcast is probably as cool as I will ever get. Mm. Right? Wow. This is a cool podcast. Peaks now.
Mark this day down in history.
Right? They want me to be who I am, right? Mm. Because they don't get that in their everyday lives. They want people to be authentic mm-hmm. to who they are. And it took me a long time to figure out who I was authentically in my identity. And I'm not interested in, I spent a lot of my middle school and high school years trying to be somebody I wasn't. Mm. Now that I figured this out, I have zero interest in trying to pretend to be somebody else.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You have a plant and a cat, and you love finding the story in a chart. That's
pretty
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wait, you do have a cat, right? Did I remember that?
I don't have a cat.
No.
You don't have a cat. You don't have a cat. You have a plant.
However, I do know what? Juliana does have a personal goal to eat pizza on every continent.
I do.
Have you accomplished your goal yet?
Not yet.
What remains on the list?
We have done North America, uh-huh. South America, Asia, Europe, and Africa. So we're down to Australia and Antarctica. Mm. The issue here is that I can do Antarctica, but it is really expensive.
Yeah,
that is the most expensive pizza ever.
I'm a church worker. Right. Mm-hmm. So it may take me a while before that happens. Anyone's in Australia and wants to invite me over for some sort of work function.
We know.
I might be.
I know some Australian Lutherans thanks to the worship conference.
I think five down is not a terrible place
Very
to be.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm sorry for forgetting you don't have a cat. Earlier in this episode, as you all saw, my family were bustling back and forth behind me trying to get water bottles for a sports practice. And I was a little distracted. I heard the plant bit. It made my heart sing because I love plants. But
I have managed to keep one plant alive for 2 years.
Nice.
Which is a personal best.
What kind of plant is it?
I don't know.
That's the best.
It is a plant someone purchased for me for my birthday.
Are you sure it's real and not plastic?
I am sure because I just repotted
it.
I do know it. I may have killed it over the weekend just in case anyone asked about me later.
Juliana, if you can remember to do this, could you please, when you get home, text a picture of your cat, or not your cat. Text a picture of your plant to Sarah, who can put it up on Instagram, and we will find out what your plant is.
Identify Juliana's plant.
Identify the plant. I could probably figure it out, but it has a bulbous tuber in the root system, so you can't underwater it. It's like the camel of plants.
That's
why it works. Because I travel a lot, which is why I don't have a cat.
Yeah.
But I could never keep the plant alive because the plant would go uncared for. But it has its own space
reservoir.
Right?
Uh-huh. Very nice.
So, okay, now I really, really, really want to see what plant this is because I might need it in my life.
Is it a radish?
It's not a radish. Or it could be. I don't know.
We will crowdsource the answer for you.
We will crowdsource the answer. But yes.
Can we also name your plant?
Ooh.
Does your plant have a name?
It does not have a name.
We can totally crowdsource that too.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's some Instagram gold right there.
That's right.
Instagram loves naming things.
I do have another question though. What is the most practical advice you have for a youth leader attending their first ever LCMS youth gathering?
Yeah.
That's the practical
summer.
Advice.
It is this summer.
It's coming up.
We're excited.
Yeah.
Practical advice.
But unexpected, both. I want practical yet unexpected.
Not just like go to lcmsgathering.com and learn everything you know. Like, we all know that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But yes, also wear tennis shoes. That's really good advice. It's so much walking.
Yeah. Wear the tennis shoes. Go to the website. Get all the information. Prepare a lot. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, be prepared and then show up and be present. I think that's kind of my big, right? Like, you're going to go and you're going to be worried about all the things. Like, we should don't forget to take it in, right? Because when you are taking it in and you're paying attention to your kids, that's when they're going to have the best experience, right? Mm-hmm. When you are focused on how are they hearing God's good news in this, in our theme of endure, that's when they're going to get the most out of it, and not when you're like, I have logistically figured out exactly when we are going to eat breakfast.
Yeah.
I think the most practical, the other practical thing is to set up your housing in a way where every night at least one of your adults gets a good night of sleep.
Oh,
right.
That is so good.
It doesn't have to be you every time.
Uh-huh. Should be, though.
But you, especially that last night, whoever's in charge of travel needs to get 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Right. Because you cannot make good decisions
set
off
them
of 4
up
hours
for success.
Of sleep.
That's so, very good advice.
Right? Like, just who is the person tonight who is getting really good rest so that they can be the decision maker tomorrow?
Okay. I like that.
Yes. That's like wisdom that. Right there.
I'm telling you. Okay. You're trying to make decisions about your airplane, you know, your flight's delayed and no one has had more than 4 hours of sleep in 5 days.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, it's brutal, man. Yeah. Nobody's making good calls then.
No, but you know, we're all so nice that we feel like bad about advocating for our sleep needs. But if you have this conversation ahead of time and plan for it, like that's proactive. That's great. I love this.
Nobody feels bad about it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, Juliana, it has been super fun having you in the lounge, finally.
Yeah, so grateful to be here and to hang out with you guys.
We've got a lot of links to put in the show notes today. So End Goals for sure, The Places to Find, Relationships Count, Seven Practices of Youth Ministry. Is that one? That
was Health Ministry.
Seven Practices of Healthy Youth Ministry. I should know that. It's on my bookshelf in my cubicle. Of course, the LCMS gathering happening this summer. We'll put a link to that because registration is currently...
Data when entry is going to open up next month. And then registration first day to send in your data or to send in your information is November 1st.
Yes.
Ooh,
okay.
So it's really soon. Up there.
Mm-hmm. Very soon.
Yeah.
So we'll put the information there. There's already information up on lcmsgathering.com so people can go and read.
Wait, is it now LCMS Gathering? It's not even Youth Gathering anymore. It's just LCMS Gathering?
Well, the website's LCMS Gathering.
Yes.
It is the LCMS Youth Gathering.
Okay.
It's no longer the National
That's
Youth Gathering because we have other countries that come.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So, like last time, we had 17 other countries in attendance.
Okay. So it's no longer.
Okay. So now it's just the LCMS.
Youth. Got it.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. Yes.
Fair enough.
It is a youth gathering. The URL is LCMSgathering. There we go.
.com, not .org. That's surprising.
.org also works though, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They both
It'll
work.
Redirect. Okay.
The .com is the one that we publish everywhere though. So thanks. Thanks for joining us. It's been great.
You can come back anytime. You said we were cool. I don't know how you came by that, but okay, I'll take it.
You guys have the cool podcast. You didn't know that? Ours is all educational in business.
Oh,
right? No. You guys are the fun. You're the fun podcast.
We do
I don't know how we got the cooler podcast than LCMS Youth Ministry.
We did.
That was a massive coup.
You heard it here, folks.
Ladies, we're going to post a picture of Juliana's plant on our Instagram. So if you really want to know what that is, you can follow us on our Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge, and also in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge. If I remember, I'll post it there too. I'm so much worse at posting things in the Facebook group because there's already so much content there. I don't have to post anything for people to be talking. But on our Instagram, I will post it for sure. You can join us in both of those places. You can find all of our podcasts at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on the KFUO radio app or on your favorite podcasting app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel, the cool one.
No fair, you go last.
I know, right?
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.